Hey everybody, this is Greg Miliatis from StartMyConsultingBusiness.com, and today I'm really excited to have Alan Chatfield here. And he's made a really interesting transition from full-time day job to self-employment, and he did it not like a lot of people who've done the lifestyle design thing, where they're like Alan and I were talking about before the call, where they're digital nomads. They're just, you know, a single person, not married, no kids. But he did that transition from day job to self-employment, being married and having kids. And so that's a really different kind of mindset and different sort of setup and a whole different set of challenges that he faced and took on and was able to be successful with. So I want to talk to him a little bit about that, but also talk to him about how he got started consulting and, you know, the kind of consulting that he does. And then we'll talk a little bit more to what makes a good consultant, what typical mistakes consultants make when they're trying to sell to clients and that kind of thing. So So thanks, Alan, again, for taking the time out of your day to for this interview. Thanks again. And so why don't you just kind of talk a little bit about your background and how you got started consulting, and then talk about, I guess, one of the things I'm really interested about is your whole transition from day job to self-employment.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. And thanks for a great introduction. So one of the points you made there was about digital nomads and people being individuals who normally do the lifestyle design thing. I didn't even know what I was doing was the lifestyle design thing until fairly recently. So my background is that I did have a day job, like you say. I worked in the city. But when you say most people who do the lifestyle design thing don't have a family, actually, the reason that I quit my day job and became self-employed, although I didn't look at it like that at the time, was absolutely about my family.
Right.
What actually happened is one day... So I had a great job, right? And I didn't get fired. I quit my job.
So did you have other? I don't want to say employment. Did you have other income or consulting clients lined up, and were you working on those when you quit your day job?
In my case, no, I didn't. But when I speak to clients now, and I do speak to, I've got three types of clients: corporate clients, small businesses, and one-to-one clients. And it's an interesting question, because when I speak to one-to-one clients who say, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to set up, whether it's a consulting business or one of my recent clients said he was so tired of working long hours for a major consultancy that he wanted to quit and become a guitar teacher. Uh-huh. And it took a lot of effort to actually persuade him just to not to quit his job and to give guitar teaching a try anyway whilst doing his job. But he felt like, I think like a lot of people do it, he was so overworked in his job and he was so stressed with it that he thought it's just time to give up. And the point there is, when people try and follow a passion-based business, be really passionate about something, they make that their living, what can happen is it's no longer a passion. If that's how you earn your bread and butter, if that's how you're going to make your income, suddenly the passion goes away when you rely on that for an income. And you can actually find
Absolutely.
Out. Yeah, so I persuaded that guy to just try. In fact, I actually told him, I'm not going to have the next call with you until you tell me you've got a client. I don't care how you get it. So I kind of forced him to put an ad in the local paper. And he got a client. And what he found was amazing. He found that it wasn't what he expected. It wasn't what he expected in terms of being the teacher he thought was going to be really rewarding. But all of the extra pieces, asking for money, having a client, actually teaching someone who was a teenager and having to speak to that person's parents rather than directly to his client, all of these little kind of nuances about when you set up your own business and the things you have to deal with, he would never have known until he actually tried it.
You know, that's a really excellent point, because I see that all the time in the readers that are on my blog, you know, where there's sort of two things that you mentioned there. One is that a lot of times people, they think that the only way to get out of the rat race or off the, you know, the treadmill is to totally quit their day job and then start something different.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then the other thing too is trying to understand that the work that you're going to be doing is actually building a business. It's not just the technical work, whether it's teaching guitar or teaching somebody how to set up a website or, you know, whatever the consulting, the technical stuff that you do as a consultant is, or a service-based business is. That is a portion, and it may actually be sort of a smallish portion of the total amount of time that you're going to be spending on your business when you first start it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why notoriously catering is people in catering struggle as business very often. If you like to bake a cake, then you think, right, I love baking cakes. I'm going to set up a cake baking business, right? But as you say, the business aspect of it is huge. So just to finish on me being a hypocrite, so I started that with, I actually did quit my job without transitioning. So I had a great job. I actually worked for a major investment bank. So don't hang up, right? But I work for one of the top...
Two strikes against you.
They're worse than estate agents at the moment, investment bankers. But I wasn't a banker. I was in IT anyway, so that's my excuse. But I was a director in a tier one investment bank. Unlike most directors work 5 days a week and they're married to the job. I actually worked 4 days a week. I already had a really good setup. I had, 4 day week, still got home to see my kids every morning, every evening, sorry, before they go to bed and read stories with them, etc. What actually changed that made me quit my job? One day I turned around and I looked at my son, who is 9 years old, and this is, having said, I see them every evening, right, and I see them at weekends and spend a lot of time with them. I looked at him, he's 9 years old, and I just felt like, you know what, the last time I looked at you, you were five. It was a really bizarre moment. Like, even though I saw them all the time, I just looked down at my son, saw he was nine, and thought, the last time I looked at you, you were five. Like, how did those 4 years go by so quickly?
I know the exact feeling. I was walking through our house, and just this morning, and there was this, I made some little, sort of photo collages on the piano that we have, and there's a little one of our son and one of our daughter, and there's a picture of my son just, last year, and then a picture of him when he was, had about 15 months. And he's 12 now. And I'm like, how did that even happen? Exactly. And so I completely, that totally resonates with
me. Yeah. One of the things that I've always been curious about is people work hard to support their family, but the time they actually finish work and retire to actually have time to see their family is that when the kids have left home, they've gone to university, when it's too late. People retire on 50, late 50s, 60, 65. And it's kind of not long after the kids have left home and it's too late. Like a lot of people in these environments, in these big corporate environments, I had this plan that, okay, I'm gonna work for another 5 years and then I'm gonna do something else. But that becomes a moving 5 year window. And so, this South of France thing also came into play. So we planned at some point to move to the South of France. So that moment when I looked at my son was kind of the trigger where I thought, do you know what, to hell with it. If we move now and it doesn't work out, then I can come back. But I won't regret, even if I just take 1 year out, I won't regret that. I'll really be able to be with the kids. Because that moment came after having spent time with them. But even if you go home, even if you think you're not switched on to work, you're still thinking about the next day or the day before or some, I've got an analytical mind.
You're still preoccupied with it.
A little bit, yeah. So you're not really fully there for your children. I mean, I always thought I was, but I'm not going to be able to have as much fun with them as if I can go to any play they have at school or spend a day with them or anything. So what I actually did is I quit work, and cut a long story short, I designed a life where literally I work from 9 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon every day, apart from the odd call like this where you have to schedule things with people from different geographies. So...
Sure.
And actually, the reason that we have this call right now, and the reason we've agreed on this time, my wife is with the kids at a karate class, so I wouldn't be with them anyway. I'm not doing karate with them. I'm not even missing any time with my kids by having this call with you now. So between 9 and 3, because that's the time my kids are at school. So every single minute of every single day, it might seem like an exaggeration, but every single minute of every single day, if we wanted to, I can spend time with the family. And I'm not a super family, over the top family guy, always kind of, always. I just think it's valuable time. So, my kids might not even want to spend time with me. Might be out in the park playing with their friends. But at least the possibility is there.
Yeah, and part of it too, like you were saying, is because you compartmentalize the amount of time that you work, and you limit the amount of time that you work. You're able to, literally unplug from the work and be able to be more present with your kids and with your family.
Yeah, and the other side that, I mean, we could go on to talk about this for a long time, and I know you want to get into talking about consulting, but the other thing is, I learn a lot from my kids. Like, seeing them grow up every day, there's so many things that I wouldn't have even known about or cared about without really knowing it by going to work. they come home and I think, well, is that what they're doing at school these days? You know, and then I take an interest and I learn a lot from my kids. Things I would never know otherwise. That side of it's pretty good too.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's really cool. So it sounds like the whole impetus for you making this change was realizing, essentially, you know, life is short. You know, this time with your kids is passing literally before your eyes, and you want to be able to kind of switch it around so that you be able to spend time with your kids, but you're spending time with your kids and making that the priority, and then having the work stuff for the family, but not be so much of a, or I guess, the major focus of all your time.
Yeah, I mean, there are kind of a few things that came together, to be honest. So one was this thing about the south of France. We planned to move to the south of France. The other thing was seeing my son. And the other thing was the idea that if I took a year off, what would that cost me? What then happened is we came to the countryside for this 1 year, the 1 year with the kids, before we did anything else. I then constructed or designed a life for myself, I guess, that let me do all the things I didn't get a chance to do when I was working. So I do four different jobs. I do a different job each day. I'm a consultant, but then I'm also working on property, and then I also do some investment. I also write.
So tell me about that. So you quit your job.
Yeah.
And you're starting to kind of plan out, you know, the move from London to France, and which is, you know, a whole logistical thing in and of itself. You know, a big project. But then you're building these other income sources, one of which is consulting.
Yeah.
So, and this is sort of the part, I think, where a lot of people get caught and they don't know what to do. They hear about people, I became a consultant. I started doing consulting. And, you know, to me, like when I first started consulting, before I started consulting, I thought about like, well, how do you even do that? Like, where do you even start? Like, I don't even know like where the starting line is and like, you know, where to take the first step. And so I think that's where a lot of people, you know, they don't know what to do. And so can you tell me a little bit about how you started and what were those first steps that you took to get those consulting, get that consulting work?
So I've got my own philosophy around consulting and coaching and any kind of selling, which is not the normal, which we can come to. If the question is, how do I set up as a consultant on my own? To me, it's all about relationships. So my advice would be, join a consultancy, learn the ropes about how to do consultancy in a consultancy where somebody else is effectively selling you to clients. They're selling your work, and then as you get more senior, you sell yourself. Learn the full cycle, and then set up your own consultancy. That would be the quickest way for me to do it, because it's all about relationships. So the biggest problem with trying to sell consulting is trying to sell consulting. I don't try and sell anything. What I try and do is build relationships.
Uh-huh.
Like you're a consultant, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, how do you sell consulting?
Oftentimes, the person who is coming to me with the deliverable request, they might not have the answers to those questions. So I would get kind of funneled up the chain to the higher level decision makers, and then I'd be able to talk with them on a higher level scale and kind of build that relationship. And so, but that's kind of how I get clients get work. But again, it's like you said, it's relationship based.
So when the mid-level person is talking to you, they're not the true buyer, right? You're finding the true buyer by them going back and answering your questions.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they are, and they can make, you know, they can approve different decisions and things like that, you know, up to a certain, you know, monetary amount depending on the law firm and that kind of thing. But it's much better to get to the, you know, that economic buyer, you know, the law firm partner, you know, the sort of top level person, top level decision maker, because then once you know them and you've got a relationship and this trust and credibility with them, then you can recommend other services. But again, it's relationship based. And if you don't build that relationship, if you're just selling your services, selling your skills or your expertise, I think that really commoditizes you, because there's, you know, tens of thousands of people who do the kind of technical work that I do. Not necessarily in my tiny little niche, but there are tens of thousands of people who could do the kind of coding and know the kind of programming languages that I do.
Yeah.
But the value that I have is this sort of being able to understand, you know, a bit about how a law firm runs, and being able to say, okay, well, here's how you can automate all this stuff so it's going to save time, increase revenue. You can use it this way to, you know, boost your marketing and you know, all this other stuff. You know, so I'm not competing directly so much against people who have my exact same skill set, the technical skill set. So I'm not selling that skill set so much. I'm selling, how am I understanding your business? Or like, I already understand your business, and here's how I can help your business. And I think that might be kind of where you're going, where you're not trying to just sell yourself. You're trying to show and demonstrate, you know, the kind of value that you can provide to the client. Is that kind of what you were alluding to?
Well, the reason I asked you the question is because, in my view, there are only three ways to sell consulting. And you've covered two of them. I mean, you said you have existing clients, which is all relationship-based. And then you said you have new clients who find you through SEO. Mm-hmm. But there's some relationship that comes into that, because then the conversation goes along the lines of you actually starting to try and get higher-level questions and ask them about stuff that's more in their interest rather than you trying to sell stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the three ways I see to sell consulting. Number one is you pitch. Whether that's an advertisement or whether it's a proposal, a beauty parade, you're pitching to a client, right? You're saying, uh-huh. We'd like to sell you our services. We think we can help you. The second way is delivery-led. You're already there. You're already doing work, and you've proven yourself to the client, so you've got a track record. And either they continue uh-huh. that engagement, or they say, well, you're already in the building. We'll put you on a different engagement, and it's going to save us a lot of hassle finding another consultant we uh-huh. don't know. That's delivery-led. And then the third way is relationship-led. Uh-huh. So you either pitch or proposal, delivery-led or relationship-led. In my experience, there's only one way to go. Like, I've worked for consulting firms who constantly try and pitch. They're constantly, like, I've worked for a firm that's constantly trying to, they say our main competitor is Accenture or whatever. We're constantly trying to make a better proposal in Accenture. Well, guess what? Neither firm gets it, because there's no relationship already there. They're trying to pitch and show how great their company is. But especially when you're pitching to senior people, they're not buying your company, they're buying the people. You know, people buy
Absolutely.
People. So the most important thing is a relationship. And when you were talking through how you go about your business, my guess would be that if you've got relationships established, like, it's much harder for you when someone finds your site through SEO than if they already know you, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if somebody already knows me, then I can, you know, call them up and, know, thinking about such and so, and this is something we might want to consider for you, or have you considered XYZ, or what are you doing for this issue, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a very different conversation than, you know, somebody comes to me through SEO, for example.
Yeah. I mean, in the online world, I see a lot of people talking recently via articles and things about trust and authority. Then there was this thing about know, like, and trust, KLT, all these kind of know, like, and trust model and everything, and then trust and authority. Mm-hmm. As if it's the big thing, right? It's always been about trust and authority. Like, if you're selling consulting, you've always got to win the client's trust first. Like, unless you've got a really stupid client who doesn't, you just buy anything, they want to know that you're a safe pair of hands. Especially if you're charging decent consulting rates. They're not going to pay you higher than they're going to pay just a temp to come in and do something, right? So that's kind of why I say, the problem with trying to sell consulting is trying to sell consulting. If you're trying too hard, then that doesn't come off well. You've got to, first of all, build a relationship, and then the consulting sells itself. Like, there are plenty of people with problems out there, so people are gonna come to you then.
So for getting started, like in your example, or for clients, you know, people who you coach to do this, how have you found? What do you suggest for them to do to get started in identifying people who might be a good fit for them, and then they can start building the relationship? What are some of the first steps that you might identify for them?
Okay, so are we talking about people who already have a network, or they have no network whatsoever, and they've never done any consulting, or have they already done some consulting?
Well, let's start from like bare bones. Like, so they don't have a network, and maybe they haven't done consulting independently yet, but they've got sort of a skill set and expertise, and they're sort of in an industry or sort of in a market niche.
Okay, so they've got some expertise, and they want to go out into a blank market with no network and sell that expertise. That's going to be really hard, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no two ways about it. The first thing you've got to do is have something that you can tell a client. Because what's the first thing the client's going to ask you? Where have you worked before? Or, you know, they at least want to know who you know. And it doesn't mean that you can't get some work to start with. You only need one person to refer you. It could be your very first client. The thing to do is go out and get some experience with the very first client, give them a discount, do it for free, And then that first client, you're going to do such a wonderful job, they're going to refer you to the next client. And then you've got two referrals. Mm-hmm. You can do it that way. But the first thing to do is build your network. Of those three ways to sell that I was telling you about, by far, the most consult. I mean, I sold a lot of consulting for my firm.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my job was to sell, right? I sold a lot of work. I mean, the work that I sold was on the golf course, in the restaurant. You know, it was in a conversation, in a relaxed environment with people who I was just, uh-huh. you know, networking with as another human being. Not like, oh, I'm going to network with you now. You know, I just need to try right. and sell you some work okay. now. You know, right. like just a friend. And so,
right.
you know, and what would happen if people feel relaxed? It's not like you have to build trust. They trust you because you're relaxed and they're relaxed. So uh-huh. I'll be sitting in the restaurant with someone very senior and I'm paying for the meal. I'm just like, do you want to come out? I want to borrow your brain for a bit. You know, I'll treat you to the meal. I want to ask you about something. It's a complete uh-huh. aside. It's nothing to do with me trying to sell them business.
Uh-huh.
But then in the course of that conversation, that guy might ask me, do you know what? I've got a static data project. Do you know anyone who does static data?
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but let me find out for you. Right? I'm going to go and do my best to find that guy because he's senior, someone to help him. And it's not even going to be someone from my firm. If I can't find someone in my firm, I'll go to another firm. Because then he knows that he can come to me if he's got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's exactly right. Because I found that again and again with my clients. You know, once you're trusted and, you know, you're talking with them about stuff, and oftentimes it's not even necessarily about a particular project, but they'll ask about some other unrelated thing, something that's unrelated to my specific skill set. But again and again, I'll say, well, you know, I'm sure I could, you know, find somebody who does that, or I already know somebody who does XYZ, and I'll, you know, make the referral, or I'll, you know, subcontract that person or whatever else it is. But the result is that senior person, that decision maker, they see you as someone who can solve their problems.
Exactly.
And so they'll come to you again and again.
Yeah. And the other thing is, successful senior people, they know it's about networking. It doesn't mean mm-hmm. you're the only person they come to. It doesn't mean you're going to get another thing soon, which also doesn't mean that you should chase them up and say, hey, I helped you out with that thing once. Do you remember? Can you, you know, throw me a bone? You know, but you right. shouldn't be chasing after people, basically. You've got to be patient. And the more patient you can be and the more connections you can make where you're just making connections and networking, that's the way to start.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to accelerate that process, and we're talking about consulting here, join a company, join a consultancy where you're going to have a job scheduler who's going to put you in client sites anyway. And then effectively, it's like free training. You're working for a company. You're building your network because you have to, because that's what the company's paying you for.
Uh-huh.
And just value every connection that you make. So that, in terms of, if you're saying to me, how would you start as a consultant? I'd definitely say just start. And whether you're a consultant of anything, any business, start building relationships. Another thing about selling, I mean, you've got time for it if I tell you a very quick story?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So I've got a couple other questions for you too, but yeah, go ahead.
So just to kind of hammer home the point, I guess, the relationship for me has to be established the right way around. It doesn't mean that I'm never going to ring people up and sell to them, but I hardly ever need to. I mean, I might, because I have very good friends in business now, I might ring up someone and say, you know, I know you've got a new role. Have you got any work?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that in years, and I probably, you know, won't need to.
Right.
However, so the way people who I know are generally will come to me, but you kind of have to put yourself in that environment. So obviously, if I'm no longer in the city and I'm no longer around in those organizations, walking around, you know, walking the corridors, having a coffee, whatever it is, with those people, I'm not going to be front of mind. So they're not going to be thinking, I'll give Alan right. a call. I'm in the countryside a million miles away, like actually 250 miles away. But my very key clients, right, the ones who I've worked with, and this is like 3 years ago now, still call me from time to time. They might call me for advice, or they might call me to find a referral, to like, do you know someone who can help me? And when they do, I still don't take the work. Like, you've got to be patient, because if you can refuse work, then it sounds a bit odd, but if someone can ring you and you actually refuse work, you're going to get more calls.
Mm-hmm. It's just yeah, it's sort it of this whole scarcity mentality, I think.
Yeah, they know you're comfortable. Like, clients, especially in the corporate environment, if they know that you're looking for work, you're less valuable to them. Whereas if you can afford to refuse work, then you're more valuable to them.
Right. I think, well, and there's this sort of perception of value. If you can afford to turn down work, then there's sort of this assumption I think that people make that, wow, he's really in demand or she's really in demand. And so they must be really good. And so that's the person that I want to work with, I want working for me.
Or at least confident enough in your own skin that you're probably good, right? That you can afford to turn down work. Like, you say that, and that's one assumption, but I don't make any secret of the fact when I speak to anybody, I only ever take on 3 clients at any one time. I won't accept more than 3 clients. Mm-hmm. I'll have clients waiting, and money that I could be taking, even if I've got time to do it, I'll only take 3 clients. And the reason is, if I have 3 clients, I know that I can exceed their expectations, I can deliver great value to those clients. Because if I've only got 3, I can have extra calls with them, I can over-deliver. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, if you start taking on too many, then it's hard to juggle everybody, and then you're giving less value because you're just stretched thin.
That's not the kind of when people assume you're busy, you've got plenty of work, that's not the kind of scarcity that I like, where you say, oh, that guy must be really good because he's got like 100 clients or something, because then you're starting to burn the candle at both ends. And for me personally, that's starting to compromise the thing that I came here for in the first place, which is to have a nice relaxed life, right? So 3 clients for me, I'm very, very happy. I've got plenty of income streams, and I'd rather have 3 clients to keep my hand in and do the work that way. So the quick story I was going to tell you about selling, so this is the time I was working for a boutique consultancy, like a financial markets consultancy, one with a very good reputation. The company was very happy because I got a role in a bank again, working for a very senior guy. And the role was this chief of staff role, like a trusted advisor, quite a senior role. So what actually happened during the course of me working there as well, I was supposed to work for him for 3 months, I ended up working for him for a year, and a part of my job was to find a replacement. I kept on offering him replacements, but he didn't want them. along the lines of, I'd established myself as a trusted advisor he wanted to keep there. Part of that role was he had this thing called a weekly deals clinic. And in this weekly deals clinic, he would go through every third-party consultancy, contractor, third-party software house, whatever, all of the money that they were paying to external parties and how much they were paying and what the contracts, when the contracts were due to run out and whether they'd renew them, all that kind of thing. And I chaired that meeting for him as his chief of staff. Now, my firm knew that I chaired this meeting for him. So they knew I was reading through basically a list of all of his consulting work. And every week, there were several opportunities on that list to pitch, to say, well, we could help you with that. Mm-hmm. So my boss back at the consultancy was putting immense pressure on me to say, you should be bringing in some work here, Alan, right?
Yeah.
And eventually I got tired of him and I said, look, to be honest, I've never actually even tried. Which was a terrible thing to say to my boss. And actually I got graded down that year in my kind of, you have yearly appraisals when you work for firms. So I got graded down. But I knew I was doing a good job. This guy wanted to keep me. And to me, it was like a breach of confidence. But then what happened was very interesting. After 6 months of doing this, 6 months of working for him, and, loyally going to this meeting and reading through the list and never saying, we could help you with that. I never once said it. After 6 months was the first time that guy said to me, could you help me with that? Mm-hmm. And once he did, that established the relationship that way around. Once he said to me, could you help me with that? He didn't do it several times, soon after. But then I started getting people in the door because it had taken that long to build the trust that he felt he could come to me and say, actually, it made it really convenient for him. Like, the first time he said, can you help me with that? I found him the best guy. Mm-hmm. And then from then on, he would come to me. Because if I'd have started by saying, can I help you with that? That's the way around the relationship's established. So he would expect me to go to him again if I wanted more work. And to go to him again. And how many times have I got him before I piss him off?
Rather than him coming to you.
Once the relationship is established that way around, because he knows what I do, there's no point in sitting there and saying we can help you that. Of course he knows that, He knows I work for a consultancy, he got me in there. So what's the point in me saying to him, why don't you let us help you with that? Mm-hmm. That was my thinking. And actually, we sold a lot more work that way eventually.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, because one of the things that I find with consultants who are just starting out is, you know, they're eager to, you know, get their consulting, you know, get consulting work and clients. And so when they, you know, when they're doing the pitching, like you mentioned, which is just, you know, kind of pure selling,
they rush it. They rush it.
Yeah, they rush it. And there's part of it that comes across is this, I don't want to say desperation, but it can sometimes appear like that. And so that's, to me, it always seems like that's just a total relationship killer. You know, when you're desperate for work and you're constantly pitching and that's all you're doing for the client. You know, the client doesn't want to hear that. They don't want anybody around them that's just constantly pitching and that seems desperate for work.
Yeah, to me, that's a classic sales meeting mistake. And it's not just junior people that do it. The goal of a sales meeting, for me, is to get another meeting. That's the goal of a meeting, is to get another meeting. And if that other meeting is, okay, you're now in the building, we want you to start, fine. But so many people go into sales meetings and think, I've got to get a signature out of this. Like, I've got to try and close the deal. You know, it's back to the relationship again. It's much more valuable. Like, let's say you said to me, I can choose, actually, right? I'm going to a first sales meeting with a senior guy. And you said to me, Alan, I'm like a, you know, I'm going to wave my magic wand. You're going to have the meeting anyway, but at the end of the meeting, you can choose one of two things. You can have the guy's signature and you start next week. So he's agreed to you to do the work. Or you can have another meeting to talk to him a bit more with, you know, almost like, you know, almost certainly the work further down the line. And I could choose which one. I would take the next meeting rather than having the work in the bag. Because what would happen is if you don't build a relationship first and be patient about it, you go in the building and you don't really know the client and the client doesn't really know you. You haven't built a rapport and it can be more dangerous.
Right, absolutely. Because then you're kind of like your aim is off.
You're a stranger.
You're you know, trying to do one thing, but the client really needs something that's a little bit different. And if you'd spent more time investigating that and talking about that, asking more questions that where you're educating yourself about what the client needs, you're going to be much better able to deliver what's going to be a much higher value for them.
Right. So be patient, right? Be patient because it's all about long-term relationships.
Right. So I have a question about networking, because I've heard this from other folks too. When they first try to network and they first try to get consulting gigs and clients, they'll go to these networking events and, you know, pass out business cards and talk to other people. And what they find often is that the only people attending these events are people who are like them, who are trying to sell services or whatever. And so essentially what you're doing is you're going to a room that's filled with a bunch of people who are trying to sell to each other. And, you know, it's really counterproductive. So in terms of starting to develop those relationships, you know, I've you know, heard of different strategies for folks to do that and to, you know, find or identify and then get in front of decision makers. But what are some suggestions you can give for that? Just saying that you're starting out, you know, sort of from scratch without a network already in place.
Okay, so first of all, I really don't do networking events. And my advice would be to anybody, if they're going to hand out business cards, then make it look different. Because people get home and they have business cards and it's just like, you know, a collection of cards. They forget the person. Do something that makes them remember you, right? But I don't do networking events anyway because they're not going to remember the business card. They're going to remember the personality, if anything. Right. So I think the point is, back to what I said earlier about relationships and where the best place to build a relationship is in a comfortable environment. So as a consultant, I drank way too much coffee, and I don't even like coffee, but taking someone out for a coffee is the standard industry excuse for having a chat, right? I mean, do you want a coffee? It's much easier to say, can I buy you a coffee, than I'd like to talk to you for half an hour. I'd like to talk to what you want about. I'd like to talk to you about, or like, you know, I'd like to try and sell you some work. Can I buy you a coffee is a really easy thing. You're making it really easy for them. Sure, you can buy me a coffee. Both parties know what that means. But, you know, that's, to me, I'd far rather network like networking events have got so many people. It's like speed dating. You're not really getting to know anybody. So it's better to go and meet someone one-on-one or you know, one to two, or, you know, a couple of people going up with another couple of people and getting to know them over coffees that way gradually, than to go to some stupid networking event. I really, you know, I'm not a fan of networking events, but if I did find myself in one, then I wouldn't think I've got to meet as many people as I can. I would concentrate on who am I finding some common ground with, who am I getting rapport with, and I'd really make the point. I'd be like, I wouldn't talk about myself, I'd talk about them, like, what, you know, how can I help you, you know, uh-huh. That kind of thing. And show,
you know, and I find that again and again, that you know, if you could provide value, even, you know, you're not charging for it, this is, you know, just you're just talking to them or whatever, if you could refer to them to someone who can you know, meet their needs or whatever, if you're seen as a person who can provide value again and again to somebody, then they're going to come to you, and, you know, you're eventually going to have a client.
Yeah, put it this way, it's more likely, right, if you say something that's on the periphery of work or not work related at all in a networking event, like if you find out someone plays golf at the same golf course as you, mm-hmm. they're more likely to give you a call. So let's go for a game of golf. And uh-huh. then guess what? Through just building relationship naturally, you end up with a business contact, but, you know, after a couple of games of golf or something. Uh-huh. If it's just about business and it's a bit dry and people are a bit nervous and like you say, I mean, people have got to networking events. My wife said to me when we moved here, oh, there's a networking event at the local, I can't remember what it was, you know, some assembly rooms or something like that. Uh-huh. And I, are you crazy? She said, you should go there. Like, you know, it might be nice. I'm like, you know what kind of people go to networking events? You know, people I would never network with, you know, like people right. who, I'm sorry, but to me, that's like, you know, I would go there with my head hang low. Like, okay, finally I had to right. come to a networking event. So, I'm not saying, you know, at the end of the day, people are people, right? So you might meet some people there and get on really well, but
generally it's a much more successful approach to target somebody and say, you know, that's a person I want to get to know and learn more about what they do or whatever, and then, you know, take them out for coffee and talk about that stuff rather than do the sort of networking quote-unquote event.
And if you're talking about selling work, right, and you say there's a person I'd like to get to know, you've got to also look at it from their point of view. I mean, why would they want to get to know you? And if you can't mm-hmm. answer that, then what the hell are you doing talking to them anyway? Mm-hmm. Like, if you can genuinely help someone, right, then, you know, it shouldn't need that much persuasion. Mm-hmm. Get somebody to introduce you or something. Get something to make that networking easier. Or mm-hmm. take your time, be patient, like we were talking about, and let the relationship build that way. If you work for a consultancy and you're selling work, the thing you said earlier about you get this mid-level person who comes and then they take your questions back and you end up getting to speak to the higher-level person, which I would, in my head when you were saying that, I was interpreting as the real buyer, the person who really holds the purse strings,
right.
the more senior right. sponsor, right? In the consultancies that I've worked for, the conversation with the person back at base who's trying to get the gig is always, is there a budget? So we're not wasting our time talking to people when there's actually no budget there. Because actually, often firms can bring consultancies in just to learn stuff.
Right.
Right. Is there a budget? And do we know there's a budget and enough budget? And are you speaking to the real buyer? Like, the sales meeting could have someone in who claims they're the buyer, but they're not really the buyer. They're not the real buyer. They're not the real influencer or the person you need to persuade to get uh-huh. the work. They're not the real sponsor.
Yeah, the sponsor or the driver of whatever the project is or the work is.
Yeah. And selling work isn't that easy, but it's common sense, right? And so the problem that most consultancies make is they only really look at those two things. And they say those two things have got to line up. Like, you've got to have the budget and you've got to be speaking to the right person. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's not two things that need to line up. There's six things that need to line up. Two things that people always focus on are the budget and the person. Consultancies constantly try and persuade firms that they have a problem, sometimes when they don't. Mm-hmm. And that can kick you in the backside as well later. Like, if you've tricked a company into buying your services when they didn't really need to and they didn't really have a problem, that mm-hmm. can turn out very bad as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So the things that need to line up, they've got to have the budget, you've got to be speaking to the right person, that person's got to have an appetite to buy, right? Mm-hmm. So if they haven't got the appetite, you shouldn't be pushing it because, again, this gets back to the relationship. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they won't have the appetite next time you speak, so you can wait. The next thing, there has to be a problem there to be solved, right? Don't ever try and persuade a firm. They've got a problem, unless you're genuine, right? Unless you've spotted a problem that they don't know about, and then you're helping them,
mm-hmm.
right? Don't try and shoehorn your way into a client. That's number four. Number five, the client has to believe that we can help them solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this is the trust idea.
Right. And then
finally, we have to have the resources to solve that problem. So another thing consultants do very often, they go out and they sell work, and then they scrabble around trying to find people on the bench or whatever to actually satisfy the work and end up putting people in who are not really a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all of those six things have to line up. And if they don't all line up at the same time, something's broken somewhere. And they can line up. It's just common sense. Like, why do people go and try and sell work when there's not a problem to be fixed? Or why do people go and try and sell work when the person's not interested in talking to you whatsoever?
Because they've got a quota to meet.
Exactly. But but that's so, working against the consultancy.
So if you're a consulting firm, you've got this quota that you're trying to meet. And so you're, you know, trying to push...
Yeah, targets.
...in clients or whatever. And if you're a solo practitioner, a solo consultant, and you've got bills to pay... then you're going to be sort of in the same thing. That's your goal. You know, what's my monthly bills this month, and how am I going to earn enough to pay that? And so, but like you said, if you can, you know, of course, transition out of the day job to consulting, where you're not desperate for revenue from consulting, you're not going to be constantly pushing work where there's really not so much a need, and you're going to be able to be more patient to build the relationships to the point where they're going to be much more fruitful down the road than just trying to, you know, pitch.
Yeah. So what you just said there about you need to pay the bills, if that's really stopping you from being patient when it comes to selling consulting work, then for me, the answer is not to sell more consulting work. For me, the answer is to find something more stable. It could be consulting work, but at a lower level where you don't have to try and sell so much. So whether it's something repetitive, whether it's something a little bit less skilled than you would normally take, but some bottom line that at least pays the bills so that you can be free to go and sell your consulting work in the best way. Because if you're trying to push it, it comes through. I mean, it's, you know, then you're gonna be in the worst consultant.
Yeah, so transparent.
Yeah. So it's all about being patient. It's all about building trust and building relationships and enjoying the process as well. Like, if you're happy and you're going there and you're comfortable and you're able to refuse work, really genuinely interested in the success of the client, even if it means referring them to somebody else, then, you know, I recently, because if I do work, I've got very tight criteria. Like, I don't live in London anymore, so I won't take work that's 5 days a week. I'll only work maximum 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I generally tend to do fixed price contracts or very, very short term things. And so... Mm-hmm. I had a job that I was perfect for recently, and a client who I really, you know, get on very, very well with, right? Really, really liked the guy and really wanted to help, but it had to be full time. And it's like, if I was in the city, I would love this piece of work. I mean, it was exciting, but I referred him to somebody else. I referred him to a friend of mine and said, this guy's going to do a better job than me because he can give it his full attention. And sometimes you have to do that kind of thing, but then by doing that, I've not really lost anything. I mean, okay, I didn't do the work, but that's my decision. But by helping the guy, he's still going to come back to me in the future. I've helped a friend who is very, very going to do a very, very good job.
Yeah, that's, and so kind of, and you have to by doing that, it's sort of building the value that you provide the client, because the client's going to say, oh, you know, Alan referred me to so-and-so, and that guy did a fantastic job. And, you know, so it's not like you're losing the relationship by referring away.
No, I'm still attached to that work. Yeah, I'm still attached to it because it's me that referred the guy, and that will be remembered.
Right. Yeah. Right. But that's really interesting, though. That, you know, because that's one of the things that I found difficult when I first started consulting was being patient and learning how to develop those relationships. And of course, that took time, and it wasn't about pitching. It was actually the opposite. It was about, you know, how can I give them some value without pitching, without selling them something, and that wasn't always easy. And you know, but now it's sort of, I've seen the benefits of doing that. It's, you know, it comes back, you know, way more than just trying to, you know, get much more business and much better business by building the relationships and, you know, trying to just consistently provide great value to clients rather than just, you know, pitch them on services.
Yeah. I think you've got to be comfortable that the if you're providing value to clients, then the financial side is going to take care of itself. Mm-hmm. And if you're not comfortable with that kind of, I guess people call this deferred gratification, right? So if you're not comfortable with deferring it and deferring the payment and being and not having to chase accounts or whatever, I haven't been paid yet, and all this kind of, if you kind of, it comes across as more adult to be able to stand back and say, that's fine, and help them without asking for anything, because there's this thing of reciprocity as well. If you're giving value constantly, people are going to want to give you value back. Maybe not directly. It might be just a little thing, but if you're constantly giving value to as many people as you can, it's going to come back. The only other thing I'd say in terms of value. So another quick story. There's this guy I work for at HSBC, a client, and he said he's become a good friend, and he said to me, "I've got a couple of weeks to work for you." This is after I moved to the countryside. So I said to him, "Okay, well, if it's a couple of weeks, I'll help you for free. I mean, there's no problem. Get one of you guys to send me what it is you want me to do." He got one of his guys to send me, and it was like, it wasn't a couple of weeks work whatsoever. I mean, this guy's very disorganized. It was 6 weeks of work. And so I said, "Look, you know, I'd come down there for 2 weeks and I wouldn't charge you a penny, but I can't do 6 weeks of work for free. So right. It's either I'll come down, I'll do 2 weeks, I'll train one of your guys and they can take over from me, and I'll help you as much as I can in those 2 weeks, or I'll do the 6 weeks of work, but it'll be at my rate and it'll be 3 days a week." And that's kind of an important point as well. I do free, or I do my rate. I don't discount when it comes to corporate consulting. And that's because if he's a good friend, I could easily afford to discount massively for him. But things stay behind. You know, when you talk about networking, the networking continues when you've left the building, because people still talk about you when you've gone, especially with consulting work. And right. So if I was to say, okay. So my rate was 1,300 a day. If I was to say, okay, for you, I can do £500 a day, right? I could easily afford to do that. But what would then stop is, at some point, there'd be a conversation somewhere in that organization. Who did this? Oh, Alan did it. What did he charge? And that stays behind. So it's an important part of your brand to keep that high end. And like you say, You've got to concentrate on value, offering value. Don't compete on price. Because when you said you commoditize something, consulting services, you start to compete on price. You compete on value. I see a lot of
people wanting to do that. You know, it sort of comes from, I don't know if it's like a desperation, but this desire to just have, you know, clients in some kind of work, any kind of work, and you know, then they are, you know, people get willing to discount their price, or they become unwilling to. Or really uncomfortable about quoting, you know, whatever their rate is, if it's, you know, considerably higher than, you know, what they're being paid on a salary, for example.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the point is that they try to justify discounting their rate. And, you know, I don't see how competing on price, I've never seen competing on price for consultants to be helpful, because it just sort of cheapens the perception of the value that you're providing.
Like you said before, you put it really well, actually, because it's about commoditizing things. If you start to commoditize, then you're inviting your audience to compare prices.
Right.
And the value is in the relationship, and in it's in, you know, when you sell consulting, the value is not in, you know, law software or whatever it is. It's in Greg, right? Mm-hmm. So right. And that's what people are
paying. Right, the understanding that Greg. I have about their business and the relationship and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, so it's not about, you know, the kind of, you know, whatever I can code or whatever. It's about how I understand their business and how I can help their business, how I can help them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, hey, Alan, thank you so much for your time. This has been really interesting, you know, hearing your story and also, you know, your perspective on how to, you know, sell, you know, sort of without selling, I want to say, you know, consulting services, because that's a really huge part of it. And building the relationships, like you said, that's sort of, you know, just a basic foundation of building a consulting business in particular, you know, but really, you know, most any business. But it's been really interesting to have a chance to talk with you. And thank you again for your time. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk again soon. Now, if people want to get in touch with you, how might they be able to do that?
The best way is just go to lifestoogood.net, and then there's various contact details on there, Twitter and all the social media, or just stick your name in the box and join our email list, and then I can get right back to you via email.
Cool.
One other thing, I mean, the thing we talked about was all around corporate consulting. I have to say, I mean, I do three types of consulting. I do one-to-one, individual, small business consulting, and corporate. We're obviously not going. We obviously haven't got time right now. I mean, maybe we'll have another conversation in the future. But they are three very different beasts. We talked about corporate today. Small business and individual is a different story altogether.
Yeah, because they're very different markets, very different needs. I think that each market has, or you know, size of, or type of business has.
Yeah,
they're absolutely true.
I mean, the principles are the same. You know, you're gonna be talking about building relationships, whichever you talk about. All it comes down to, though, is corporate consulting. You know, you're dealing with an organization, and small businesses and individuals. The purse strings are a bit more in the picture.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Cool. Well, thank you so much again, Alan. I sure appreciate it. I'll let you get going, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Great. Good to speak to you, Greg.
Great. Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.